Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we head to Frost Fest in Fayetteville, Arkansas, to talk to some professional brewers about their breweries and their beers, tasty beers, and useful tips for home brewers. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener. Don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, go to basicbrewing.com first. Click on our associate link on the right-hand side of the page. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. We greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're in the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music, and we're on the iHeartRadio app too. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. Here's a mead update from my Simple Mead I started a couple of weeks ago. A 2-gallon batch, starting gravity 1064, just water and honey and yeast and a nutrient. I pitched with 2 packets of a Saffale US05, and I've been feeding it nutrient along the way. And I expected the thing to finish quickly, but it's just been steadily perking along. I'm impatient. So last night, I pitched a packet of a Fleischmann's bread yeast in there. So I've had good luck with bread yeast going quickly through meads. So there was less CO2 when I degassed by swirling the fermenter around this morning. So I'm hoping that that's a good sign that things are finishing up. The airlock smells great. It's a nice, fresh, wildflower honey smell. And if the activity slows down in the next couple of days, I'll get a wine thief and take a gravity reading to see where we are. I posted a video episode on Monday. I've been talking forever about my sorghum Belgian-inspired beer, and you finally get to see it. And you get to see how I brewed it. And you also get to see how they made the sorghum in Cane Hill, Arkansas this past fall. Now, what I'm talking about, when I talk about sorghum, there's been some confusion. I'm talking about sweet sorghum syrup, not the grain sorghum that can be malted and is used to make gluten-free beers. This is the sticky stuff, the dark, sticky stuff made from sorghum cane. It's sorghum cane that's cooked down to a 10% of its original volume to make something that looks like molasses. Now, to add to the confusion, some people call this stuff sorghum molasses, but it's neither the sorghum grain nor true molasses. So it's no wonder people get mixed up. Molasses, or treacle, as you may call it, is a byproduct of making sugar from sugar cane or sugar beets. But this sweet sorghum syrup is more like maple syrup, although you have to boil down maple sap way more to get maple syrup, about 40 to 1, as I understand, instead of the 10 to 1 that you do with the sorghum cane juice. Regardless of what it is or how it's made, sorghum syrup is great on pancakes, and as it turns out, it's a very tasty part of a Belgian-style beer. I essentially used it as a substitute for Belgian candy sugar, and it's really, really fun to use local ingredients, and I had a ton of fun shooting the behind-the-scenes segment on how the syrup is made. They really do it the old-fashioned way in Cane Hill. And many thanks to the fine folks in Cane Hill for helping me out on that. And I'd like to do more things like that, do some little video segments. It takes me back to my TV reporter days. I brewed that Belgian-inspired beer in my brew-in-a-bag system from our sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. Every time I use my electric system, I like it more. It's run by the Warthog EBC-130 electric brewery controller, which has two modes, a mash mode and a boil mode. In the mash mode, the controller automatically reduces the power level as it approaches the set temperature, so you don't just zoom past your strike water target. And in the boil mode, the digital readout shows you precisely what your power level is. So, for instance, once you reach the boil, you can dial back from 100 to 70%, say, to maintain the vigor of the boil that you like. And the system has a timer built in that can either shut off your power when it ends or just beep at you when it reaches the end of that timer. Mine is the 240-volt version, but you can get it in 120. And if you have more sophisticated needs, the Warthog line of controllers has several more versions with more capability. Very cool stuff. Check out all the Warthog controllers and complete turnkey systems at family-owned highgravitybrew.com. Now let's go back in time a couple of weekends. Steve Wilkes asked me to help set up and work the booth for Steve's Brew Shop at the annual Frost Fest Festival. The event is organized by the fine folks at Fossil Cove Brewing in Fayetteville. Now, before things got going, I wandered around and nabbed some interviews from brewers that are outside our area that I haven't had a chance to visit yet. All right, now introduce yourself and tell me where you're from.
So I'm Jonathan Martin. I'm from Bubba Brews Brewing Company in Bonnerdale, Arkansas, which is about 15 minutes southwest of Hot Springs in west central Arkansas.
My hometown.
That's right. That's right. my adopted town now. I've been there for about 15 years, I guess, and love it.
So give us some background on Bubba Brews.
So Bubba Brews was the inception between, to make a long story short, I'm an attorney by day, and I've been a brewer for about 15 years or so, and I've got a client that was in the restaurant and bar business, and over an after work meeting one day, he was sampling some that I'd made, and we said, hey, why don't we do this? And that's how it started. That conversation happened in 2014, and we got started that winter.
Tell me about your system.
We use a 7-barrel ABE, American Beer Equipment, out of Lincoln, Nebraska, system. We've got a 79-barrel cellar capacity with our fermenters and brights and stuff. And it's a two-vessel system, so we've got a combined mash lauter and then a bowl kettle. So.
And what's your distribution method? I mean, who are you serving to?
We self-distribute, which is allowed here in Arkansas, and we have a footprint that goes from Arkadelphia in southwest Arkansas up to about Maumelle, Cabot in central Arkansas. So Little Rock and surrounding metro, Hot Springs and surrounding metro, and then some of the smaller communities in and around those.
Awesome. Well, it's good to have a good beer sprouting up around my hometown.
That's right. That's right. It's Hot Springs is starting to have a little market of its own down there with the beer. We've got two breweries there now and another one in planning and a couple of brew pubs that are in the works. So things awesome. Are looking up.
Well, tell me what I'm drinking here.
So this is the Winter Hammer. This is our winter seasonal. It's kind of a hybrid between a Belgian strong and an English old ale. The English old ale for the grain bill, and we use the Belgian candy syrup and stuff for it. It's spiced with cinnamon, ginger, coriander, nutmeg, the traditional winter mulling spices. It's about 9.6%, and it's very appropriate for the weather we're experiencing today. It'll kind of warm you up on the way down. Good, sweet, malty beer, you know. So
you're talking to homebrewers around the world. Give us some tips on how to brew this beer.
This beer, you know, don't be afraid with the malt. We go very malt heavy. We wanted a good big body on this beer. We mash this in a little warmer than we do a lot of our other beers, just to have some good residual dextrin to give it a nice heft. The candy syrup goes in relatively late in the boil, just to get it incorporated good. And then we use an Abbey style yeast to ferment this on, which gives it a real good ester quality at the end too. So we love it. This is the second batch we did. We did it last year as well. It's one of those that from year to year we change a little bit, so it's not going to be the same beer next year as this one is, you know, this year. So we like to swap that up. But it's a lot of fun. You know, my biggest advice to the homebrewers that are going to do a beer like this though is just have fun with it, experiment, and you know, and don't be afraid to go big.
And what's your approach on fermentation temperature?
With this one, we fermented around 68, I want to say, with the Abbey yeast, which is pretty middle of the road for the yeast that we used, but it gives it a lot of that nice ester quality that we wouldn't get from much cooler temperature. So that one, with that starting gravity, that was about probably a 10 to 12 day ferment before it got down to final. So it started off quick, and you know, it maintained a good steady rate for a while. So
awesome. Well, excellent. I'm glad to meet you. It's good to have everybody come up to me up here in Northwest Arkansas.
That's right. Well, they put on a great festival down here, and we've had a ball the last couple of times we've been up, and we try to bring some good beer for you guys to sample. So
awesome. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you. Enjoy.
Okay, so introduce yourself. Who are you and where are you from?
My name is Ariana Glantz, and I'm from Wiseacre Brewing Company out of Memphis, Tennessee.
And tell me about the brewery.
So the brewery is a brewery that's about 4 years old. We opened in September of 2013. We're owned by two brothers, Davin and Kellen Bartosh, who are both from Memphis. Davin is actually a brewer who used to be the head brewer at Rock Bottom in Chicago, in downtown Chicago, for about 7 years. And now he's the head brewer at our brewery. And his brother used to be in sales for Sierra Nevada in Las Vegas. So they're both from Memphis, and they knew growing up they wanted to open a brewery because David actually started home brewing in college, and you know, found that college is a great place to test out recipes because you have a lot of thirsty people. And then he went to brewing school at the Siebel Institute in Chicago, and then in Germany, came back to Chicago, worked under Pete Crowley over at Rock Bottom, and then became head brewer himself because he and his brother knew that they wanted to open a brewery but wanted to go get as much knowledge as they could before they came back. So they both spent about 10 years in the industry, Kellen doing sales and marketing and David doing brewing. And while David was head brewer at Rock Bottom, he won some medals at the Grand American Beer Festival, at World Beer Cup, at FOBAB, at, you know, all those other things. So it was time to come back to Memphis in 2013. And part of the reason why was because the water in Memphis is so clean. It only has like 5 parts per million of any mineral content, which is similar to the water of Pils in Czech Republic. So it makes for a really soft palate. So that's why one of our flagship beers is a Pilsner, 4.5%. We won a bronze medal for it at the Great American Beer Festival in 2014. And so we've made about 100 beers since we've been open, and just started distributing in Arkansas about 9 months ago. So we're kind of new to Arkansas.
Cool. So can I have a sample of something? What's interesting to talk about?
So, well, Tiny Bomb is our flagship, so it is a Pilsner, really clean, really crisp. Pilsners kind of have gotten a bad name since the 80s, you know, making light macro lagers, but this is something we're super proud of, 4.5%. We use only German lager malt, Pilsner malt, and then only German lager yeast, and then we add a little bit of honey from Mississippi, so you get a little bit, you don't get it really in the taste, but you get a lot of it in the aroma.
Cool, fix me up. We've got a nice chilly afternoon here for Frostfest, and it's a beautiful looking beer. So if you do you have any homebrew tips? Are there any tips for brewing that you could give homebrewers or homebrewers, or is that your area?
Sure. It's something that David always would say, is just keep trying and keep fussing with stuff, because you know, you're only going to get it right over time. So, and he really pays attention to water quality and then also the bubble quality. So he always says to make sure that, you know, you're carbonating more than you think you should, because even if the beer is maybe not quite where you want it to be, if it has more bubbles, it'll still, you know, refresh the palate and give you a little bit of that sensation that you want, so you can kind of like, you know, hide it a little bit.
This is delicious. It's got you can taste the grain. I mean, it's a nice grainy beer. I mean, I think that's why Pilsner has gotten a bad reputation, is because, you know, they try to, you know, the legend is they try to take most of the flavor out of it. But this is a nice, you can taste the crisp hops. You can taste the nice crisp grain. It's very nice and very clean.
Thank you. You sold it to me. That's exactly how I would describe it to somebody else. So we are using Bravo and Mott Hood, which are derivatives of the noble hop that you would want to use in a German Pilsner. So we have to call it an American Pilsner because we use honey, and that would violate our Heinzgebots. But, you know, it's really true in the German Pilsner quality. And it's something that, you know, David would wholeheartedly agree with you, is, you know, people get a bad rap for Pilsners because they're supposed to be devoid of flavor, when really it's so delicate. And it's like eating like a really good scallop. Like, you want a scallop that nothing has been done to. It's just been kissed by the fire and maybe some salt, and that's it. And that's like how you can really taste quality, is just when it's at its simplest. And this beer has for sure saved my life at festivals. You know, when you're trying 10% barley wines and all sorts of things, and then you're like, oh, here's a nice 4.5 beer, and it's delicious. I can now, you know, drink three or four of those, because at the brewery, you know, we're not drinking one beer. We're drinking 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
So if it's low in alcohol and you're adding honey, I mean, usually a lot of times, you know, the sugar or the honey is to boost alcohol or that has that effect. What do you know what percentage of honey it is in the fermentables?
Sure. So we operate on a 20-barrel brew house, and we add about 50 pounds of honey to every 20-barrel brew. And so the sugar is actually cutting into the amount of grain that we use. So the yeast can eat the sugar from the honey, because it's fermentable honey, rather than eating more sugar from the grain. So, you know, it's the yeast is just doing overtime work and eating all the sugar, so you don't have any residual sugar left in the aftertaste. So all of our beers are going to be super dry in that way. And we actually reuse our yeast. So we usually go through about 10 cycles of the yeast. So they're very well-trained yeast particles.
So they're accustomed to that kind of a diet, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Well, this is delicious. I'm glad we got to catch up with you. One day I'll make it over to Memphis.
Absolutely. That'd be great. Yeah, we have a brew and a tap room, and our tap room is open 6 days a week, and Tiny Bomb's found in cans throughout all of Arkansas and Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana. I was like, what state comes after Mississippi? Louisiana, Chicago, and Philadelphia.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name's Dave. From is sort of a difficult question, but the short
answer
is...
Who do you work for?
I work for Lazy Magnolia, and we're in southern Mississippi.
There you go. And I am drinking Southern Pecan, yes. which I've kind of talked about on the show, because we talked about brewing with nuts.
Okay.
So talk about this beer.
So as far as we know, we're the very first brewery to use pecans in brewing commercially. We roast our pecans. I don't know if I'm telling trade secrets or not, but in an old Popeye's biscuit oven. It's the only thing in 12 years that hasn't broken down at the brewery. And we roast them each morning and add them shell and meat to, into the grain, into the cook.
Into the mash?
Yes. Yes, we mash in. You might be able to find just a hint of tannin. That's going to be from the shell. And the shell gives you that that little bit of backbone that holds up to the meatiness of the pecan.
Very interesting, because I grew up with pecan trees surrounding us. And, you know, if you get a little bit of the wrong part of the pecan, you get a little astringent flavor in there.
Sure.
And it really surprises me that the shells go in there, but I don't get, tannin may be a good word, but this is not astringent at all. I don't get that kind of coating on the tongue.
Yeah. So it's not going to be as much as a red wine, where you're digging into the stems and seeds of a grape in order to extract that tannin. But the shell just gives you a little bit of the backbone.
That's interesting. What's the base beer like? What would you call that?
So nut brown ale, pretty close to, if I'd had to say somebody else's brand, I would say probably, what's that most famous nut brown that's out there from somewhere in England, Newcastle, something like that. But I would say that we're pretty close to that category. And then the addition of pecans just gives us an added dimension.
So not to get into trade secrets again, but
yes,
we're talking to homebrewers around the world. How much pecan do they put into the mash to get the kind of effect? I mean, give us a guide.
So
a bunch or a little?
And I would say it's a bunch. So when we brew, we use a bunch of pecans. And, you know, the whole a bunch of pecans lends something to it's expensive to brew every day when you're brewing a lot on a, 60-barrel system. If you're doing 5 gallons in your house for a homebrew system, you know, you're probably using about the same number of ounces that you're using in hops. So it's going to be, you know, 2 pecans, 3 pecans in a 5-gallon batch. I mean,
really?
It's not going to be a ton. And it's probably more than that. I've never really measured out for that. And I don't do the brewing. I do a lot of the selling. But I would say it's a pretty light number. So, you know, I wouldn't go with that whole, you know, use 10 pounds of pecans for a 5-pound batch. Save that for a Belgian quad or, you know, something else.
Or a pecan pie.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's good that you're pronouncing it properly.
Yeah, right. Well,
because I say the pecan goes under the bed.
Yes, yes. And my father actually owns a two-story house where the bathroom is at the bottom level and all the bedrooms are at the top level. So, yeah, the pecans are actually very useful in that house.
Glad you got my joke. So tell me about Lazy Magnolia.
So we are Mississippi's oldest brewery. We are 13 this year. 14 years ago, they thought it was illegal to brew beer in Mississippi. And our owners, Mark and Leslie Henderson, went and talked to a couple different people to try to figure out where exactly that law was. And, you know, the first couple people they talked to, it was, you know, we know this law exists, we just can't find it. And they're like, well, you really need to dig deeper. I really need something. And Prohibition was a little bit longer in Mississippi, so it started 12 years before for the rest of the country, the mandate, and went to 1968. So Prohibition was a really long time in Mississippi. Wow. We did figure out that if there was really a law on the books, it was probably written pre-Prohibition, and if the fine is 10 cents a day, we'll just write the check at the end of the year.
No prorating for inflation.
Right, right. Exactly. So we are still struggling to get some beer served at, you know, if you come in and tour our facility, which we welcome you to do, you right now can't buy a beer or buy a six-pack to go. And we're working really hard to change that right now. We've got bills, I think it's SB 1322 maybe, in Mississippi. And don't quote me on the number, but I'm sure you can look it up. And we've got bills right now written to try to get that changed so that you can come and enjoy the full experience.
Well, at least talking homebrew.
Yes. Yes. So homebrew was illegal both in Mississippi and Alabama much later than it was the rest of the country.
Just a few years ago it changed. So, yes. Yeah. I went to a homebrew competition. It was called the Outlaw Homebrew Competition in Hattiesburg because it was illegal at the time. So
right. Yeah. Right.
Well, all right, Dave, we'll let you get back to it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thanks.
All right.
Perfect. Uh-oh. All right, tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Jeremy Horn. I'm from Wichita Brewing Company in Wichita, Kansas.
And what am I drinking here?
It's the first of our Cecilia Series blend. It's a blend of a 100% Brett-fermented rye sour, and then a little bit of our Belgian Double and another kind of lighter colored sour.
That's tasty. It's got a good level of sourness, but there's a fairly substantial body, you know, to balance that out. Tell me about all the components.
So first component is a kind of a red rye sour that has been aging in our fooder for probably since late October, early November. And then the other sour blend portion is kind of a lighter color sour, like I said, that we've been aging in wine barrels. And then just a little bit of our Belgian Double, which is a kind of an estuary, you know, Belgian-style dark ale.
It's very nice. Now, talk to me about your brewery.
We opened our first brew pub in August of 2011. We opened the second brew pub in June of 2015, so going on 2 years ago. And then we started our production facility where we, you know, larger scale brewing in our canning line just right out a year ago, last February 2016.
Do you do a lot of sours?
This will be the first one out of the production facility. We usually have something on tap that's sour at the brew pubs, and we have for a long time. But in terms of putting a sour beer in cans, this will be the first one.
In cans. So you're talking to home brewers around the world. Give us your tips on brewing good sour beers.
That's a good question. Just get crazy. I mean, you know, try new things. That one, for instance, the first step with the rye sour was a kettle sour process. So as soon as the wort is created from the mash, you know, we put five different strains of lacto into the boil kettle, let it sit until we get to a pH of, 3.4?
This one got a little bit lower, but right around there, yeah.
This is Kyle. Say hi, Kyle.
Hi, this is Kyle.
And then we took that kettle soured wort, put it into our fooder with Brettanomyces lambicus, right?
The fooder is 100% Brett.
It's a Brett ale.
Yes. sorry.
And people know what you're talking about. You're talking to an educated audience out here.
Yeah, so Brett L. So, I mean, the big thing with those is just, you know, experiment, try crazy stuff, because...
And to homebrewers, this one actually came on the homebrew scale, is how we got to this beer. Not the blend, but the rye-based version of it. It was started on that level, and something that we really liked and wanted to pursue a little bit farther.
So there is a certain segment of the brewing population that turns its nose up at kettle souring. I know that there's an advantage to on the commercial side to kettle souring, because you can kill the bugs, you know, before you get into your fermentation system. I've done kettle souring or wort souring myself, and I like it. So what can you say to the skeptics who say that that kettle souring is subpar?
Well, I mean, it's a quick way to get the pH down a little bit, you know, get some of that lactic acid tartness that we can, I mean, achieve in a day or two, just to kind of speed up the process a little bit before we, in the case of that beer, put it in our fooder with Brettanomyces, which at that point it sits, you know, for 4 to 6 months probably. But it just, you know, it gives us a little bit of lactic acid tartness to start with that seems to be appealing in terms of flavor.
So there are no sour bugs in the fooder, it's just Brett?
Yes.
It was very nice. So talk about your brewery as a whole.
At our brew pubs, we have probably 18 beers on tap at any given time that kind of cover the full spectrum. At the production facility, I think we have 7 brands right now that are in cans and on draft. We sell beer. Yeah, right there. They're all there. If this wasn't radio or podcast, you could see them. Selling beer for distribution only in Kansas right now, but we're hoping to open Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, and Nebraska sometime this year.
So when people think of a Wichita Brewing Company, what's the beer that they usually think about?
Our V6 IPA is our best-selling brand, at least in our home market.
Well, awesome. Well, I'm so...
We have brew pubs, we have full-scale restaurants, you know, 2 of them, where we make wood-fired pizza. If you're ever in Wichita, you need to stop by and try our pizza, too.
Be a good excuse to go up there. Well, I'm glad that you guys made it over, and I'm looking forward to getting your beers locally.
Yeah, look forward to it, too.
No, I tell everybody my job is to make you and me sound smart. So usually it's more of a challenge. Yeah, usually it's more of a challenge on my end of the thing. But tell me who you are and where you're from.
So I'm Riley O'Connor. I'm from Alpha Brewing Company in St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, give me something to sample here, Riley.
Okay, well, what kind of beer do you like?
I like all beer. What are you proud of? What do you think's interesting to talk about with home brewers?
You know, I think we're primarily a barrel-aged brewery in St. Louis. So we have a lot of wine and whiskey, bourbon, etc., barrel-aged beers. I brought a couple of those today. I think one of the better ones is Apocrypha. It's our black sour saison. It's Asian Pinot Noir barrels. Comes in right around 7%. Has a huge red wine character. I think it's just an interesting beer. You should give it a shot.
Awesome. We got the band going now. So tell me about this beer, you're talking to an educated audience, so give us the elevator pitch.
Well, if I'm being honest, it's a yeast that we grew up ourselves, that we really wisely call sour yeast at the brewery. Kind of a joke among Derek and I, who's the owner and founder of Alpha Brewing Company.
Talk about the base beer, first of all. What's the character of the base beer?
Yeah, no, it's a dark sweeter malt. Obviously, as you can tell, it's a super dark beer. Head retention is a little bit lower just because it's aged in a barrel. It's kind of obvious. It's forced carbed. Most of the acidity, I think, comes from the barrel, but I think you can kind of pick that up yourself.
So what's the ABV on this?
It's 7% ABV. Okay. Yeah, so we kind of, I'm not too assertive or aggressive, but most of our beers clock in over 6. We just kind of do that, honestly, to facilitate like enough of a body when we throw things into a barrel. You don't want it to come out super wispy. There's obviously a lot of complexity going on there, and it's not necessarily a delicate beer, but there's definitely intricacies behind the beer itself.
It's delicious. So if I were a home brewer, what tips can you give me to brew something like this? It's nice and dark. It's complex. It's tart. It's got a dark grain bill, so you know you get the kind of darker roastier characteristics are still coming through. So if I'm a home brewer sitting at home, I love sour beers, give me your tips.
Man, it can be really tricky brewing sour beers at home, especially barrel-aged beers at home. But taking advantage of kind of the resources that you have, like not being afraid to use a Molson bag or trying to, I don't know, growing up your own yeast is kind of difficult at home unless you're trying to do some kind of cool ship thing, which I think is tricky and very experimental and kind of tough to do without having the proper equipment. But in the scheme of things, I think not being afraid of testing out different levels of acidity, even adding like wood chips or staves or whatever you can kind of find that you can actually do in a smaller batch. It's a little trickier doing that kind of project at home. Sour beers themselves, I'm not a big fan of kettle souring. I like wild fermentation. So that can be just difficult generally to create a sour beer without having the proper space.
We've got lambic brewers, you know, we've got people who capture their own yeast and we've got the people who use commercial strains and so where do you get your bugs?
The flora that we capture is pretty much the stuff around us in St. Louis, Missouri, if I'm being honest. We haven't grown up too many different strains of yeast, but in the scheme of things, the best place to look, if that's what you're talking about, would definitely be an orchard or anywhere with a fruit skin is probably the best place to start. We have a handful of orchards right around us, and most people take advantage of capturing flora there.
So do you use any commercial strains at all?
Yeah, we do. We use 1056 for just kind of like our basic stuff, or 3787 for Belgian. But for our sour, we grew it up ourselves, and we take pride in that, I guess.
Well, this is very tasty, and I appreciate your time. And one of these days, I'm going to make it over to St. Louis.
Please do. Yeah, we'd love to have you out there. Plenty of beers to try. We have three here, but many more are back home in St. Louis.
Thanks, Riley.
No problem at all. Thank you.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Wes Alexander. I'm the director of marketing sales for Marshall Brewing Company out of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Awesome. I think I've judged a homebrew competition in your fermentation space.
Oh, the Foam Cup, of course. You betcha. Yeah, that's a tremendous event. We love hosting those folks.
So tell me about your brewery.
So we opened in 2008 what I think folks would recognize as Oklahoma an oddity in terms of beer law. And we produce full-strength beer as a packaging craft brewery. Sell that across currently today on-premise accounts. That's bars, restaurants, and clubs. And then you can find our beer in liquor stores across all of Oklahoma. In addition, we're over here in Arkansas and have been for the better part of 3 years. And then we sell in all of Kansas.
Awesome. And I've had your beers, and they're all solid. So.
Well, good.
So tell me about what I'm drinking.
So one of my favorite stories at the brewery, Eric Marshall, who is the founder, the brewmaster of Marshall Brewing Company. When you go to name a beer, there's today 4,800 of us. And so even when we started in 2008, there were 1,500 of us. And we all know that craft beer is built on selection. So it's hard to come up with a really unique name. And as we had been working to name our seasonal porter, Eric brought in about 30 days in that naming process a picture of his granddad. His granddad flew a B-25 bomber in World War II and several successful missions with that plane stationed out of Corsica. Flew it home after Victory in Europe Day. And on the nose of that plane was what we'd expect, the ubiquitous, beautiful pinup lady. And then the name Big Jamoke. And Big Jamoke is the 1940s equivalency of doofus or lughead, what I call a derogatory term of endearment. So Granddad's, the name of his plane, ends up being the name of our winter seasonal beer, Big Jamoke Porter. It's an American Robust Porter. So bittersweet chocolate, coffee tones, and that American Robust port part means essentially that the beer is a little bit higher in alcohol, about 6.8% ABV. So.
And I'm drinking the coffee version here. It's delicious. The coffee obviously pairs well with the dark roastiness of the beer. So if you're a home brewer, you're talking home brewers around the world, give us some tips on how to brew a beer like this.
You know, I think the fun part about home brewing is you get to do whatever you want. You know, here, essentially how we've added the coffee into this beer, and there are numerous different ways, but if you thought about dry hopping an IPA, that's essentially what we've done. We've taken the beans fresh from the roaster, almost steaming hot from the roaster, put a coarse crack on them, and then contact time, you know, in secondary fermentation or a cold post-fermentation, and that way you really pick up the aroma. If you thought about cold-brewed coffee where you get the essence of the coffee without some of the bitterness, it's the same process as dry hopping where you're really picking up aroma. And we all know coffee goes fantastic with beer, so that's a process that we really love for adding the aroma and the nuance without getting extreme bitterness, like without the beer tasting like a cup of coffee, though that would be fine in my respect anyway.
Now, talk about the roast of the, if you roast your, you know, I roast my own coffee beans at home.
Yeah, sure.
So what kind of a roast level are we talking about for the beans?
This was the fun part. So we worked with Topeka Roasters in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and took us about 20 different iterations, partly because we love coffee so much, but we wanted to have the softer side, the nuance of the coffee. So Topeka custom roasts this just shy of an espresso roast, that full-bodied, dark roast. And so because of that, you get a little bit more pop, kind of citrus effect from the coffee. And so we're really, really proud that they, you know, agreed to partner with us and that we could, they also allowed us to drink a lot of coffee and come along on this fun process, which we learned an awful lot about. Of course, the similarities of coffee and beer are, you know, so many synergies and all of that, but a fun process, and we're really proud of what we've created with them.
So I know there are coffee nerds out there as well as, you know, as beer lovers, and do you know what variety of coffee beans that you
guys
use?
Yes, I do. This is Kenyan coffee. It's the Gichichi pea berry coffee, and we've done an unscientific test, though, at the brewery and found out that it would take roughly 4 pints of Big Jamoke coffee to equal the equivalency of caffeine of 1 cup of coffee. So I will tell you that the unscientific study did also bear this, that we know coffee and beer both to be diuretics. There's a factor of 2. So if you're drinking a coffee beer, you might have to go to the bathroom twice as often. So
we are digging into the weeds. So I'm trying to stump you, and I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
So if you're a home brewer and you're doing a 5-gallon batch, how much coffee beans should I put in that 5-gallon batch?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, I would obviously expect that you would start with about 1 pound and work up from there with what you want to do. Since it's in the secondary, you need a fair amount in order to equal flavor. So I would start somewhere around 1 pound just because it'd be fun.
Awesome. I didn't stump you. But you did give me a delicious beer. Thank you, sir.
Cheers. Pleasure meeting you. Have a great festival.
Awesome. Okay. Now, first of all, introduce yourselves and where you're from.
Yep. Chris Myers, Blue Springs, outside of KC.
And what's your brewery?
Crane Brewing Company.
Jason Lauk. I'm from Shawnee, which is a suburb of Kansas City.
All right. And you guys, you say you're specialized in sour beers.
And farmhouse.
And farmhouse beers. And I'm holding a cloudy, pinkish, it has a pinkish hue, as they said on Seinfeld. Talk about this beer while I sample it.
Yeah, so that's a base Berliner Weiss that we always have a Berliner Weiss out, and we kind of switch the fruits and additions every few months. That one's a little bit cloudier because we drove it here from Kansas City on a kind of bumpy ride, but that's got cranberries and then ginger root.
Oh, it's tasty. So I'm you're talking to home brewers around the world, so we want your tips. Go into the weeds, go into the details on this beer. What makes it, how can we be successful in making something like it?
This one, I mean, we all started as homebrewers and kind of took our passion to get this brewery started. But anyone's into sour beers, Berliner Weisses are a great start because you're just using lactobacillus. Ours has 3 different strains in it. The biggest thing we keep track of is pretty hop intolerant, so we don't add many hops at all. And it's all live lacto, so we never boil it. Homebrew equipment, we had trouble, of course, just keeping our stuff sanitized and safe using a lot of plastic. Now that we have actual brewing equipment, a lot of steel we can hit with hot water, we're not as worried leaving the lacto live the whole time.
So you don't boil at all?
Nope, not at all.
So talk about the process then. How do you make it?
So we pitched the lacto actually in the fermenters and let it sour there. We let it hit the pH that we want it to reach, let it kind of finish out. A lot of times, because one of the strains of lacto is heteroaffirmative, so it would actually start producing alcohol early on, which is why we don't want to boil it. Part of the reason is because we don't want to waste a lot of that alcohol that's been produced. And then if we need to, we can pitch additional yeast to finish it out, and then we'll add the fruit in secondary.
So do you boil pre-fermentation?
We will. Maybe it depends on the beer, but no more than an hour tops.
Okay, so there's some boiling going on. but
not related to lacto.
Oh, right, okay. So you don't kill it, in a sense. It's still live during the process.
You're getting live cultures in the beer you have right now.
So I'm getting my daily dose of probiotics Okay, well, there are Berliner Weisses that are not boiled. I mean, you just bring them up to pasteurization temperatures and hop at that point, and there you go. So talk about your grain bill. You know, give us a detail.
Pretty much just Pilsner and wheat. It's a very basic grain bill that we use for our standard Berliner Weiss.
You're just nodding.
I do the marketing and the accounting and the business side of things.
Yeah.
I'm not any good for the home brewer.
If you wanted any follow-up, we could definitely get you in touch with our brewers, because like neither one of us brews on a daily basis.
Oh, awesome. So what other beers are you guys known for?
We make quite a few different styles of farmhouse ales. Farmhouse IPA is one of our go-to year-rounds. It's just a saison that we dry hop, more like an American IPA, much more citrusy, tropical, fruity hops. We also make another saison called Trailsmith that's getting introduced pretty quickly. A lot really crisp, dry, some spice, clove, banana esters. This one that you're sampling now is our new porter, which is kind of outside of our wheelhouse. We're kind of experimenting with some more English styles as well.
So is there anything... is this just a standard porter, or is there any interesting things that you guys are doing?
The big focus is it's a 6% porter, but we tried to add as much body as we could. You know, it's got a little bit of coffee, a little bit of smokiness to it. But this is something compared to what we usually make. There's no adjuncts. There's nothing else added to it.
It's delicious. Of course, I got a little bit of the residue of the Berliner Weiss in there, which is, it's an interesting blend and not uncomplimentary, I got to say. But this is very nice. I'm glad that you guys, do you guys talk about your distribution and, you know, talk about kind of the business end of things? You guys are, maybe you can talk about that.
Yeah, so we distribute all over the Kansas City Metro. We're as far east as St. Louis, as far west as Lawrence, north Lincoln and Omaha, and south Tulsa. So we're just over a year old, so we've already got a pretty wide distribution network. We've just opened a brand new tap room the end of November, and so we have a lot of space there that people can come enjoy what we have on tap there.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks again to everybody. Lots of fun getting to sample beers and talk to brewers and brewery representatives. And I continue to be amazed at the amount of good beer in this part of the country. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. Get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our log books where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all those out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Secrets of Mental Math, The Mathemagician's Guide to Lightning Calculation and Amazing Math Tricks, and Polari Vintage Genuine Leather Tote Briefcase. Very cool. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. The next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. Well, that's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. So long.